For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live.
Well, I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Radio, and I'm Nicola Charles. Thank you for joining me on the show. Some of the items we'll be discussing this hour joyously today marks a huge technological leap forward for the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, as we're only now finding out that when we make a payment using online banking and apps, the name of the person or business we were sending that money to isn't checked. I'm sorry, what? That's right, it isn't checked by the Commonwealth Bank, betraying to us all today, February the 3rd, 2023, that they simply haven't had the technology to check names before. And now they do. Good God. This is one of those snippets of information that if I hadn't read it with my own eyes, I wouldn't have believed it. But alas, it's true. The apparent absence of a name check is the reason many customers have been the victims of scams or had payments going to the wrong places. Common sense might have dictated banks check this around 1972. Poor effort, I feel, and some cheek to proudly make a massive announcement about rectifying this gap in their security measures, expecting a good old pat on the back. Also, here's a really good one. Ever wondered what happens to the money seized from crimes? Well, the National Cabinet have been at it again. They were the ones who seemingly ran the disastrous COVID response in Australia. They've had a cracker of an idea. They want to use the proceeds from crimes to fund a national firearms registry. It's all good. Governments always have valid and entirely honest reasons for wishing to know which fully licensed and lawful citizens own guns and which ones don't. Let's face it, they won't be getting the guns of criminals on their registry, will they? And for some unexplained reason, the Queensland Premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, is pushing the charge on this one. I really had hoped she'd had her fill of totalitarianism during the past 3 years, but it seems she's only getting started. The Australian Federal Police Association's president, Alex Garawana, said an existing database currently plagued with inconsistencies across state borders could be used as a skeleton, but needed meat added to it. We need to see a uniform approach from all of the states on the collection of the data and the use of the data to keep people and police officers safe. The biggest issue is there's not enough of a uniform system to be used by police. Gosh, it really does sound like we're becoming a police state, doesn't it? The existing national database, the Australian Firearms Information Network, is run by the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission and aims to track the movement of firearms. Every state and territory uses their own technology to feed into the AFIN, but each has different definitions for firearms and ammunition, creating apparent inconsistencies. Caruana said many police forces also recorded incomplete information and there was no uniform agreement on what information is required. There is no incentive for states to put their information into the federal database, he said. The reform should create a single database that could mine data from every jurisdiction. I guess that's why universities like Monash are offering rapid qualifications over a matter of weeks in data analysis. I think this can only confirm that our government is in fact quite afraid of the people, because they know that any gun registry or gun amnesty means absolutely squat to criminals. And yet, no databases seem evident on the firearms used by criminals, the hands they've passed through, their number on the streets, their access to ammunition, or the data on their precise geolocation. I can't help but wonder why that is. As a lifelong conservative, I've always been a massive supporter of governments, the police force, and the military. But that all changed for me and a lot of other people in 2020. What we seem to be nurturing now is a police force that doesn't pit itself against criminals anymore. It almost knows it's not worth it, as courts will release those charged and arrested in rapid succession, releasing them back onto the streets in short order with their guns. Now, the real targets of suspicion since 2020 are us, everyday Australians who might, God forbid, disagree with the government. I'll be right back after this quick break. You're listening to TNT Radio.
news you can count on.
They break down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. And it looks like Australia's National Cabinet has wrapped with state premiers and chief ministers from the Australian Capital Territory and the Northern Territory, agreeing to the biggest reform to Medicare in its 40-year history. Wow. Producer Rod Stephen has more. Rod, tell us more about this.
Nicola, this agreement was urgently needed because the collapse of bulk billing and long waiting times for appointments with general practitioners has led to many people turning to hospital emergency departments. To solve the many problems with the failing system, state and territory leaders have demanded the Commonwealth provide more funding for hospitals and Medicare rebates to combat rising out-of-pocket fees and widespread doctor shortages. Waiting times to to see a doctor are also blowing out. About 40% of patients with urgent appointments are waiting more than 24 hours, and a similar percent of patients aren't being bulk billed. For their part, Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk wants a grace period before doctors are slapped with a new payroll tax. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet wants pharmacists to be able to prescribe medicines to take pressure off doctors. And Victorian Premier Dan Andrews has suggested encouraging new doctors to become GPs should be a top priority. He also wants them to be paid more and wants more places made available for them at universities.
Now, Rod, we've been told there's $750 million on the table to completely overhaul Medicare. We also know part of Prime Minister Albanese's plan is to utilise teams of primary care practitioners, such as nurses, paramedics and midwives. So what has the federal government done about this today?
Nicola, it's announced a plan from the Strengthening Medicare Task Force to get more general practitioners into the primary care system. Health Minister Mark Butler says the number of medical students aiming to become GPs is sliding dramatically, and part of the plan will focus on increasing the number of general practitioners. And he says the most terrifying statistic in the area of primary care is that now less than 14% of medical graduates are choosing general practice as their career. He added a shortage of GPs means a hell of a lot of patients who don't need hospital treatment end up in emergency rooms.
So why does it seem like this plan is short on funding commitments, Rob? Why is that the case?
Well, Nicola, the health minister says the extent of spending will be revealed in July's budget. He says he might not accept every single recommendation right now, but this is a really good set of recommendations. He adds the $750 million pledge in the election was always intended for July. But he went on to say that my health record will get more money after its current funding arrangement ends in June. And if it doesn't get the money, the whole of the e-health system in Australia will fall over. And he blames the former government for only partly funding the system, along with hundreds of other measures. But Mr. Butler says the prospect of getting more doctors into primary care is not a quick fix. Also, he hasn't ruled out an increase in the Medicare rebate, but he has ruled out an increase to the Medicare levy. Additionally, he's open to the idea of pharmacists being authorised to give prescriptions, but that's not in the hands of politicians, he says.
Wow, really big changes coming. Thanks so much for
yes,
that,
there
Rob.
Are.
Very informative. Wow. Lots of changes to Medicare. Let's hope that's received as it's laid out. I mean, it seems like massive changes to me, but we look forward to it going well. Thanks so much for that, Rod. I appreciate that report. And we're just going to take a really quick break and then we'll be speaking to Dr. Roger Clark. You're listening to TNT Radio.
You should hear what Greg Maybury is talking about.
Your book, States of Emergency, Keeping the Global Population in Check, you're arguing that the global ruling class or the oligarchy, pretty much represented by the World Economic Forum under their Great Reset rubric, they've used COVID to seize power by declaring a state of global emergency.
The ruling class is not a fixed structure, but something which is constantly renovating itself. It is, as it were, seeking its own subjectivity, if you see what I mean. There is not a fixed center, not a Dr. Evil who's sitting in the middle and who's directing the whole process, but it is a coming together of different strands and different fractions of what ultimately is the ruling class in action, so to speak. So, you know, we all see the picture of Schwab, and because of his German accent, of course, he's the ideal figure to cast as Dr. Evil in the center, and yet he isn't. He's just a secretary of one of the nodes where these different fractions and different strands come together.
The No-Fly Zone with Greg Maybury on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Morticians are reporting that vaccine deaths show thick, fibrous clots that don't easily degrade. Stop the jab and save lives. The COVID vaccine does not work. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The Commonwealth Bank of Australia's new name check technology. This is a very interesting one I'm finding today. So I've invited onto the show Dr. Roger Clark, who's an independent consultant in the strategic and policy implications of advanced information technologies, with a particular focus on e-business, information infrastructure, and data surveillance and privacy. He's a visiting professor in computer science at the ANU and a visiting professor in law at UNSW. Welcome to the show, Dr. Clark. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Nicola.
That's good. Now, do you see other Australian banks following this Commonwealth Bank name check technology? I mean, I, for one, am absolutely flabbergasted that names of individuals and businesses that we've been sending money to were not, in fact, part of the transfer. Are you surprised, or is that normal practice?
Well, it's been normal practice, and we've got to look back over history and move forwards from the past to work out what's going on, Nicola. So Australia was an early mover in applying information technology to support banking. We're one of the world's biggest countries. We're one of the world's most advanced users of information technology in many respects, have been for a long time. So we were early players in the field. So a lot of the things started in the 1960s. Now, back in the 1960s, technology was much more tightly limited, constrained, nowhere near advanced as it is now. And you'll have seen a few things, you'll have experienced this yourself, that the length of the number of characters that you can have in the name of a bank account, your own bank accounts, is quite limited, typically about 30 characters. Now, that's because back in the old days, A, we had to have fixed length fields, and B, we didn't have a lot of space. So quite restrictive. And if you run a superannuation fund, and if you've got an account that's as trustee for somebody else, you'll discover that you haven't got enough room for the whole name. That's just one of the indicators. You can't have an ampersand, an and sign in your account name. The banks do, but when you're making a payment, you can't. You've got to make it AND to join the names of two owners of an account. Those are all indicators. Now, What we've got here is another part of that old history. So, from the beginning, there's been transmission of the BSB, the first six digits, and there's been transmission of the account numbers, but there hasn't been transmission and checking of the name component. So when we move forward to internet banking and now on to mobile phone banking with our own apps, That the first two things can be checked, but the name isn't checked. It would require a connection across to the receiving bank, the payee's bank, to find out what the name is, and they don't do
See,
it.
That surprises me because, you know, should someone do just one digit incorrectly, they could sort of double check that with the name. You know, you talk about the 1960s and it was a much simpler system. I'm someone who tends to believe that simpler systems are more secure. Do you know if there's less banking crime now than there was in the 60s with all the technology, or is there more?
I don't know the answer to that. There's different kinds of fraud now. Because of the reach of the internet and because many people aren't careful enough in their dealings, and in many countries in the world, because the banking system is so bad, a lot worse than here, there's a lot of fraud now. But there always was quite a lot of fraud. There's always been scope, and especially in the credit card system. So, I really don't know the answer to that. But we've certainly got plenty of vulnerabilities. As you say, a single-digit error is one of them. And, of course, nominating if somebody puts a scam email in front of you and you're suckered in by it and you transfer money to this account, you'll have an expectation of who it is you're transferring it to. So if you see something bob up on your screen and say, no, that's not the name of that account, are you sure you want to do this? That's going to be very helpful to us all.
Now, of course, this is all happening at the same time. They're trying to make a lot of things go digital. I'm trying to work out if it's I was shocked that the names weren't being used, but I'm also trying to work out if it's now a good thing or a bad thing that our names will sort of be on all of these transactions. Do you think there's any risk to the privacy of Australians if their names are going to be flying around with these account numbers?
There is some, as there is with pretty much everything we do. We've got to look at privacy risks, notice them, and deal with them. And there is some here. It's not a lot. If a person is trying to deal, let's take an example, buying a car. If I'm trying to obscure my name, I might now have difficulties if I'm going to do an internet bank transfer. My name, depending on how they design this, by the way, we don't know how the Commonwealth has designed their system. But in the event that the payer the payee has to disclose the name of their bank account, then their ability to operate under a nom de plume, their ability to use a pseudonym,
will be
limited. That's right. So people who are, and there are quite a few people who totally legitimately may want to use a pseudonym. There are varieties of people who are at risk at any given time. If a woman or a male, for that matter, who is currently under the threat of domestic violence is using a different name for convenience and safety at the time, they might need to buy a vehicle, they might need to make a payment. So some care is needed. But if the system's designed in a different way, if the system comes back and says, no, that's not the name on this account, you'd better go back and check with the payee. If it's a no fault kind of, no, sorry, can't do that transaction because I haven't got the name near enough right, then there are ways to design these systems to take account of privacy as well.
Yeah, because I often wonder about that because, you know, being female, I often buy things online, clothing and such from sort of overseas countries back home in the UK. Have I been something of a fool when I put my actual name with my address for delivery on these orders with credit card details? Have I never needed to do that, put in my real name? Could I have put in Joe Bloggs?
What they mostly do, now this depends on the individual merchant, but a lot of the merchant designs are reasonable these days. They've been doing it for 25, 30 years and they're starting to make good sense of it now. They'll often allow you to have a different billing address from what they've got as a delivery address. So you can have the delivery to a pseudonym at an alternative address. It could be the next door neighbor. It could be whatever you choose. So there's always been some scope there, but we are locked in with payment mechanisms if we use credit cards because the financial institution will generally only let you use the name that they know you under the KYC. legislation. So the Know Your Customer legislation ties up financial institutions in many countries now, and certainly in Australia. So the financial institution has to know your commonly used name and address. And most of them will require you to have that as the name. Sorry, that's an overstatement, Roger. Some of them may require you to have it. It's very difficult to form these sentences. Some of them may require you to have that name on your account. Some of them may be, in fact, quite comfortable. Provided they know who you are, they may not be worried about the name you use on there. Some variations they'll certainly allow. I know that's a fact.
I tend to think all of these systems are massively dangerous, because, and I certainly don't want to go into digital IDs because I don't want, you know, even more information about me online. But, you know, for instance, just to order an item of clothing from overseas, they've got your name, they've got your address, they've got your bank account number, they've got that little, you know, CVC number. I still don't understand fully what that is. And they've got so much information about you. I often wonder how safe that can be, because as you say, we think we're buying from a particular company as advertised on a website, but sometimes when it appears on your account, it's a completely different organization, a completely different business. I remember once I sort of have this thing that I won't buy items from China because I don't believe in slavery. And so I ordered from what sold itself as an American company with American shirts and American items. And then when I was building my account, it was all in Chinese. And how are they allowed to get away with that the other way around? I know it's a bit off topic, but do you know anything about that? Why do we not get transparency? This is what annoys me, is that it only goes in one direction. We seem to have to portray everything about ourselves. Now it's going to be our name when we pay bills, but nothing. There's no transparency coming back. They're not required to tell us who they really are. They can set up a website and pretend to be anyone they like, right?
Yes, that's roughly right. It depends on the country. In Australia, there may be some slightly tighter rules. In America, some slightly looser ones. They're not horrible, but they're not as strong. And in China, good luck. It's not particularly consumer friendly. Look, let me just go back slightly one step there, though. Look, there are some well-designed systems whereby the data that you disclose in order to conduct a transaction is compartmentalized. And what I mean by that is there are some things you need to tell the merchant. Now, the merchant is going to send it to you. So the merchant absolutely positively needs to have the delivery address to give to the courier. The merchant doesn't actually need to know your credit card details, not even the name on it. The merchant certainly doesn't need to know the CVV. Three-digit code.
So why do we do that then?
Because the financial institution needs those details in order to check that there's a strong chance that the person who's conducting the transaction has the right to use that card. That's what the CVV is about. It doesn't prove it, but it is certainly a bit stronger authenticator than the other bits of information. So the financial institution needs it, the merchant doesn't. So our exposure in a well-designed system, which the ones in Australia are, and indeed in many countries with the Visa and MasterCard usage, it's commonly the case, not universally. It's commonly the case that the financial institution, A, is the one that's got that information, and B, is under a lot more regulatory constraint than the merchants are. I don't think you're a fool. I do the same things as you do. I do buy internationally. I pause and think, and I look at it, and I do a little bit of checking on reputation. And I think that's advisable for everybody who's doing transactions. Don't just press the button. Don't just reflex purchase. That's good advice to a consumer at any time. But pause and think, right, I'm happy with the goods I'm buying. I'm happy, I think, with the merchant. Yes, I think, hang on a tick, am I being sensible in using this payment mechanism here? And one of the first things you've got to do is look up at the top of your browser and check whether it's got the lock on it to show that it is at least protected, the information flows are at least protected against eavesdroppers. At least
Roger. Okay. Roger, this is huge for the listeners. Are you talking about in the bar, the address?
Yes. Up in the
bar. Where would the lock be?
It is normally, and it depends a little bit on your browser, but it will normally be right alongside the URL, that is the address of the website you're on, up in the top of the window. I use Safari, which is a Macintosh version. It has a padlock symbol. If you're using that horrible Android thing or variations of the Google stuff, Chrome, then you may get a different symbol, but it's a key. Again, they're trying to send you the right kind of yes, this is locked message. Right. Now, what it's locked against is somebody in between here and there. Look, every message that we send, every transaction that flows over the net goes through of the order of 25 different machines on the way to where it's going. In the event that this is protected against the 23, it's not protected against me, and it's not protected against the financial institution, but it's protected against anybody who's eavesdropping on any one of the other 23, and that's valuable.
You mean like a hacker?
A hacker who's trying to get into any of those intermediate computers. Now, if there's a hacker in the bank system or if there's a hacker in yours, there are risks here. But if there are hackers in the other 23, who cares? It doesn't affect us. So that's what that key
that's good, actually.
Is all about.
That's brilliant information, Roger. That's the best thing you've ever said to me on radio. I'm actually looking at my TNT screen and there's a little padlock in the corner, so I'm ever so pleased. That's wonderful. Great information.
So that's one of the
you're going to come back.
That's one of the things you've got to do every time you spend money. Check that.
Very good, Roger. That's the best information. Forget Commonwealth Bank. It's all about the little lock in the corner. Wonderful. Thanks so much for coming on, Roger. I'll let you go. Really good information. We're going to take a quick news headline and then we'll be right back. You're listening to TNT Radio.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Wait till you hear this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. A security officer who was wrongfully detained and wrestled to the ground by police while working to protect a news crew at an anti-lockdown protest in Australia has been awarded a six-figure payout. The Central Bank of Australia has announced the country's removing the face of the monarch from its banknotes, and Turkey has accused several of its allies, including the US and the UK, of engaging in psychological warfare.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, let's talk about this new National Firearms Registry that is apparently going to replace the state firearm registries that all communicate with each other. So I guess, well, it's been described by one of the senior police officers that he does want to beef it out with meat. I'm not sure what more meat they're talking about. So my guest for this last half hour of the show is Harry Hatzikalymnios. Harry, I hope I've pronounced that properly. My husband is Greek. He's a former detective senior constable with the Australian Federal Police with 23 years experience. So I reckon if anyone knows about guns and registries, it's Harry. Welcome to the show, Harry. How are you?
Yeah, good afternoon, Nicola. Thank you for having me and great to be here.
Thank you for coming on. I did try and call you earlier, but there's been a storm overhead and something's going very strangely wrong with our phones around here. So why do you think, Harry? Because obviously, look, I understand completely the need to have safety and requirements and registries with guns. I'm all for that. But whenever these registries and these, you know, these new national registries and situations are set up and it takes it out of state hands, I'm always worried that it's sort of an effort to take firearms out of law-abiding citizens' hands because, of course, the criminals are never going to be part of any registry. Why do you think they're doing it?
Well, look, one can only speculate. We've got to remember John Howard did a very good job of disarming the people back after Port Arthur. And we've had some, you know, we're always going to have shooting incidents. I mean, let's ban all knives. You know, let's have a knife register so you've got to be licensed to have a knife. So
that's right.
Someone will just pick up, someone will pick up a baseball bat or a block of wood. And the problem is not what's killing people. The problem is the people. And unfortunately, there is evil out there. And as we've seen in the last 2.5-3 years, there's a lot of evil at the top and it's still ongoing. And unfortunately, in society, there's a lot of evil at the bottom end as well. And the problem is, no matter what you do, you cannot protect yourself. The police can't be everywhere. So, you know, they're going to tighten up, but it's still not going to make any difference because there's been the war against drugs. I mean, you can still buy drugs. I mean, no matter what you do, it's not going to work. So I understand that they're well-intentioned, they want to keep everyone safe like they did the last 2 or 3 years, and we can see how that worked out. I mean, this is just bureaucracy and government and red tape gone mad, and this didn't happen overnight. It started around the 80s, and where we just see creep of government, both local, state, and federal, infringing and creeping on our, you know, constitutional rights. And yeah, blatantly, they're disregarding the Constitution. They're disregarding the natural law, which is what the Constitution called common law is derived and what we still should be following. But unfortunately, we've seen a lot of governments and bureaucrats seem to believe that they're outside the law and make it up as they go. And just because they write it down on a piece of paper and rush it through Parliament without any consultation or representation, they believe that's what they're there to do, which is nothing further from the truth.
Yeah. Look, I'm sure like me, you've got friends in America. And if there's one thing that this kind of national headline ignites in my friends in America, it's outrage and, oh my God, they've already done it to you in Australia. Don't let them take any more measures to take your guns. Because is there any kind of, do you know of any, with your experience, do you know of any kind of tracking or database? Do they look very much at the guns on the streets of criminals? Do they try and keep track of those, or is it just law-abiding citizens with licenses that they're after?
Well, look, when they license and ask you to go in and license yourself, whatever, look, the criminals aren't going to do it. They've never done it, never will. So then you've got a situation where you've got less, you know, the ones that legally want to have it and protect themselves or hunt or whatever they want it for, it makes it difficult for them. And then, you know, the criminal or the one that's not going to abide is still going to get access to guns, and if they want to use them a particular way, they'll do it. And that's always been the case and always will be the case. And if we look at America, that's actually what's saving them, their constitution,
right.
Their right to, you know, the
Second Amendment.
First and Second Amendment. Yeah, without a Second Amendment, you have no First Amendment. And what's happened here, by design, they've taken all the firearms off us. And as you can see now, they're now making anyone that has extreme views, or what they call extreme views, now they're trying to encapsulate or encompass them as being potentially a terrorist. Now, we've got free speech, we've got the constitutional right, freedom of speech, and also political free speech. So if basically what they're saying now, if you don't agree with us, you no longer can actually have a voice, and if you do, we're going to come after you, which is what's been happening the last 2 or 3 years. And I can only see this as part of the push in furtherance of what they're trying to do. And in the end, it's not going to achieve anything more but more red tape, more taxes, and another system that's not going to potentially do what they want it to do, because the criminals or the ones that want to get their hands on guns will always be able to get them.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't need a license to get a gun. You just need money.
Look, the other issue is, look, they're talking about, sadly, what happened in Queensland. Now, they're using that as an excuse. So, they're using four constables that were raw, were green, were not experienced, were sent out there, what's now become widely known to be a situation where a SWAT team should have gone in there. Now, the issue wasn't that it's very sad what happened there and it shouldn't have happened, but what I can't still understand is why wasn't a SWAT team sent out there if they knew they were dangerous, they had a history. Why did they send four recruits not long out of the academy to go and deal with potentially could have been a very bad situation had it gone bad, and it actually did. So, no amount of gun legislation would have prevented that situation. So I think what Palaszczuk needs to do is actually have an inquiry and start looking for answers from management, because that's been a catastrophic failure of leadership and management. So whoever ended up sending those constables out needs to account for their actions, because they've sent them out to fail. And unfortunately, look at what happened. That's terrible. And you're never going to overcome those sort of situations. So, and that's what I see. They're using certain what's happened, certain catastrophic or terrible incidents that have happened that shouldn't have happened. And I feel for those recruits and the police, but the reality is they should never have been sent out alone to do that job. There should have been, in many instances of going in when you've had that information, we'd always went in with a SWAT team it was cordoned off, made safe, then we went in. I just don't understand why that wasn't done in that instance.
Yeah, because I read, maybe you confirm this for me, I did read that they were aware that there was a licensed firearm on that property. Is that correct?
That's correct. Well, apparently now I'm reading that they're saying now that he had a license and it lapsed, and he'd been supposedly missing for a year, but he's with his brother. So there's a lot of inconsistencies in the story, and there were with his brother, there were a previous interactions with police, so they were known to police. So you've got to, there's been a failure of operational procedure there. We've got to we need an inquiry to get to the bottom of it, not to use them as a reason to toughen up laws. We need to know why that operation wasn't handled professionally with the way it should have been.
I think that's the problem. Politicians and bureaucrats, they're alley cats at the end of the day. They will just jump on any opportunity and think, how can I use this?
Well, the police, there was a video there, so there's been previous interactions, and if what they're saying is correct, that they're known and they're this and that, and they were had firearms, so that should have been the appropriate course of action. There should have been a SWAT team. There should have been and gone out there to not to bring him in 6 hours later, and all that needs to be looked at. The coroner needs to look at, and we need actually an investigation. It doesn't, and it can't be done by the Queensland Police or anyone in the Queensland government.
It's independent. Got to be independent.
And this is the problem. It's got to, we can't. We want to know the truth. We don't want any potential and just the appearance of. Conflict of interest is enough. There is a conflict of interest, so it's got to be a proper independent authority that looks at it. Usually it's another police force, a vetted team that goes in and looks at it and gets access to all the information and then can make recommendations.
Yeah, we have AC12 in England, the police that investigate the police. Do you have an equivalent of that in Australia?
There's the Corruption Commission in Queensland. There's also the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission, which used to be the Police Integrity Commission in New South Wales. There's also now a Commonwealth Corruption Commission. So there's been all these bodies, but we've had a Royal Commission in the Queensland Police. We've had a Royal Commission into the New South Wales Police, but we still seem to only be able to get to a certain level of progress. And there's recommendations whether they're ever fully taken up. We had an inquiry into the Electoral Commission, and none of the recommendations have been implemented. So, that's the other problem as well, that things are done. We have commissions, and then everyone forgets about it, and then, you know, something may or may not be done. But I think what's happened in Queensland really needs to be looked at, and also what's happened over the last 2 years, where our police have been turned into political hitmen. You know, they've been the meat and the sandwich. They've been told to carry out and do things that were really, as we know, all the fines have been thrown out because they're unlawful and unconstitutional. Yeah. So that's what we need. You know, there's calls for a COVID Royal Commission and things like that. But that's what we need in that instance.
I'm very annoyed because, yesterday a six-figure sum of Victorian taxpayer money was paid out, rightly so, he deserved it, to the security guard of Rebel News, because he was taken out and taken down while working, while protecting Avi, one of the presenters there on Rebel News. And he was taken down by police. There's a recording of it, obviously. They've got cameras and microphones. And, you know, the police fought against this guy for 18 months in court. And then yesterday he got a six-figure payout because, you know, he kept saying to them, I'm on the job, I'm working. And as you say, you know, sometimes these heated things come along and they send out very young, inexperienced officers. I noticed with a lot of police that were turning up for the anti-lockdown protests and stuff like that, they were very young. And I did wonder what they'd been told, because they certainly didn't seem to have the ethics and integrity of the older guard, the older kind of police that I'm friends with. And you know what? I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about that. Maybe we'll do that of this break.
What happens? They're giving a brief, and they're told certain things about individuals. But at the end of the day, as a constable of police, you can only act if you believe there's an offence has been committed. You can't lock someone up and do something because someone else told you they're this, that, they're a bad person or whatever. And I think that's a lot of that's been, you know, that's what's been going on. Police don't understand that they're responsible for their actions. At the end of the day, if they do something and it's unlawful, they can be sued.
That's right. But they've been misled. Yeah, I believe they've been misled. Yeah, we'll continue this after the break. Thanks so much, Harry. I'll talk to you in a moment. We're just going to take a quick break. You're listening to TNT Radio.
How can we survive? The Prime Minister of New Zealand, who once declared she was the single source of truth on COVID, is resigning.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
New Zealand Prime Minister Ardern has resigned from office and left as fallout from the COVID lockdowns continues.
Dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth. We will provide information frequently. We will share everything we can.
Can New Zealand survive now that the Prime Minister, who was the, quote, single source of truth for the country, is gone? Jacinda Ardern was the face of fascism. She was the face of COVID authoritarianism. She was the face of corporate government collusion violating free speech rights. Good riddance to Prime Minister Ardern. Maybe New Zealand can recover from the madness of COVID. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The World Economic Forum's Global Shapers community is active in 147 countries. It boasts of its network of young people driving dialogue, action, and change. The Global Shapers community recruits young people to further the aims of Klaus Schwab's technocrats at the World Economic Forum. This is a program to control the world and eliminate individual freedom. This is a program for a circular economy, a belt-tightening economy. The Global Shapers community started in 2011. It claims to be a grassroots network and offer youth-led solutions for change. But it is run top-down and grooms youth for future lavish leadership roles and promotes sustainable consumption for the masses to address a non-existent climate crisis. Future young leaders deserve better, such as optimistic vision of freedom, creativity, and economic growth.
Here's what I wanted to add to that conversation.
The conversation continues.
They just mean well, but they can't do any better what they're doing.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Now, we were talking before the break about potentially young police officers being misled during the pandemic, during the protests. And during the break there on TNT, we heard a clip of Jacinta Ardern stating that she was the single source of truth. In other words, don't watch the news, don't listen to anyone else, just listen to me. Now, Harry, I can imagine if you've got young police officers, probably newly recruited, and they're told, don't watch television, don't do your own research, we're the single source of truth, you know, because these people walk in lockstep and it's a driven agenda. I think that they were actually weaponized against citizens. And I know that a lot of my friends who are Victorian police officers left the force because that's not what they signed up for. What do you think went on with these young police officers at these rallies, Harry?
Yeah, look, that's exactly what happened. And you've got to realize too that the police, like, and you know, every person that's doing some type of job with their profession or work or whatever, in their early 20s, have come through a system where they've been indoctrinated and they've been told things. You know, their perception of reality is what they've been told is their perception of reality. Now, I actually, up until 2008, I grew up and I thought my perception of reality and what the world was like was a particular way. And it wasn't until the global financial crisis where it didn't make sense. And I started, and I had my own business, had a bit more time. I started doing some research and basically looking to disprove things and follow the, read the documents, read everything. Then I was able to, rather than disproving, I was proving everything, but I was able to prove it, not disprove it. And that's been my journey since 2008. But yeah, a lot of people come in and they're told things are a certain way and they believe it. And you can't blame them because they believe that, you know, this virus that has never been isolated or purified, and Brett Sutton said so as much at VCAT, and that matter's now going to the Supreme Court, and there's lawsuits and the government's being sued for millions and millions of dollars for losses and business and for the lockdowns and all that. Now, that's their perception of reality, and they're still pushing that narrative now, and it's very hard, very hard to break out of that conditioning.
Of that, you're absolutely
dissonance.
Right.
And you know, you can't blame them. And then we're finally getting to the stage now where they're talking about, oh, there's hesitancy to get the fifth one. And finally, after four, we're starting to see the ones that have gone that far starting to realise something's not right here. Yeah, they're even going into hospital and they're being told that it's this or that, oh, it's long COVID. So, you know, they're being given every sort of excuse. And the narrative is still, oh, it's the soil now, or it's going to the cricket or the soccer and hearing the referee's whistle might set you off. You know, all these things that just don't make sense. I mean, it's like they're just throwing it in your face and laughing at you, you know. But unfortunately, people have been so programmed. And the studies have shown it only takes 2 months of propaganda and people won't believe anything else, even if you turn around and tell them that that's not the case. They'll still believe the narrative they were told.
Yeah, and so we had 2 years of it. We had 2 years of it, and you were talking before about indoctrination, and you're absolutely right that it was the same for doctors, particularly younger doctors who were coming through medical school, is that now they've sort of changed the orientation of everything they're learning, and vaccines are king, and you know, pharmaceutical companies are gods, and you will listen to them, and essentially they are the great sales reps for the pharmaceutical industry instead of what doctors used to be, where they could use their own intellect, their own intelligence, their own experience from things that they've done, cleaning up rashes on kids, curing people of depression, all the stuff that good doctors used to be able to do. I'm sure good doctors, and I know some of them, would absolutely not advocate for children being used in any kind of medical experiment or medical trial. So to hear government saying that was extraordinary. I can only assume that, you know, I'm pretty sure, and I've heard the stories, that the police force is just like any other section of life, right? You get bad apples. So there must have been some guys, and it looked like it's some of the beatings that went on during the pandemic and the lockdowns here in Melbourne. It looked like some of them were really enjoying being quite violent with the general public. Would you say that there were sort of known bad apples sent out there to deal with that?
Well, I think what's happened over time, they do psychological asymmetric testing, and they're looking for a particular profile. And I think the profile they're looking for is someone that'll follow orders and do what they're told. That's got enough IQ to do that, but not too much of an IQ to
question.
Start asking questions, and that's what they're looking for.
Like an attack dog.
And you see all the ones. It's a shame that a lot of the police, and this is where the unions let them down, a lot of the good police left, what they should have done is banded together and it's very hard, and stood up and then had a voice, and then and that's where you need it. And even formed their own union and represent themselves rather than leaving, because then all that happens then is you get more bad apples, you get more people being recruited of the same mindset, and then you end up with a worse situation. And that's where the unions let down all. Well, unions let down all the workers in all professions, because they didn't stand up. They just took the money or whatever, and went along with the narrative. And that's the sad thing, because it takes a very, very, very strong individual to stand up. And like I said, and they were told that if you don't do this, you're not going to be able to work. And they've got to put food on the table. And now what we've got is a lot of people that are very sick and having issues. I know there's many sick in the AFP. I know there's many that are sick in New South Wales and Queensland police that have had adverse reactions, and they're still not putting it together. And they did all this to have a job, and now they're medically, and they're all being left hung out to dry, because they did what they were told, and now they've suffered the consequences. Sadly.
Absolutely. I've got a friend in VicPol, and he's a firearms expert, and he says he feels like an unexploded bomb every single day, and he's frightened to go to sleep at night because they forced him to have Moderna, and he's getting heart palpitations, and it's absolutely appalling.
Moderna's the Bill Gates. There's the DARPA, and Pfizer's a quarter strength of the Moderna. Yeah. Apparently Moderna's suing Pfizer because they stole their
recipe. surprise. Bill Gates likes doing things like that. And the UK, of course, have just ordered 250 million doses of Moderna, despite there only being about 70 million people in the country. You wonder what they're going to be injecting, you know, oranges and apples, perhaps, cows, sheep.
How many did we order in Australia? Morrison ordered some ridiculous amount. I remember the day with doctors where, yeah, if you were pregnant, you weren't. They say don't smoke, don't drink, and you definitely don't take a vaccine, any type of, but because it's a poison. And this is what people don't understand: every drug, every vaccine, not these ones. These aren't bad. They're mRNA technology. They're gene therapy. But every one of these is in the Poisons Act. They're a poison. So this is what I say to people: think of it logically. If you're putting a poison in your body to make you healthier, if that's what you're doing, and if you think that's a good thing to do, then there's something wrong with your thinking process. And that's what everything is a poison. And there's a famous doctor, and I've got it on my Telegram page and on my Facebook, putting something in your body to create an immune response to make you healthier, it goes against the very way the immune system actually operates, or words to that effect. So, and these are the doctors, and that's what I'm saying. We listened. Yeah, we went with a narrative with all these doctors that are on the payroll of Big Pharma, but no one listened to all the independent doctors, which is what it's all about, unfortunately. But looks like 99% of them have sold out, and gone along with the narrative. And unfortunately, a lot of them believe that what they're doing is correct, because they've been also trained in the system, and that's the other problem we've got. And again, they can't break out of it. They can't see. They think they're getting what they're doing is correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons, with these further gun registries, why I'm concerned is that there are less in the police force, thanks to the mandates, thanks to illness. I hear this all the time. So their numbers are reduced. And obviously our population numbers seem to be reducing a little bit as well, which is concerning. But still, you know, they're vastly outnumbered on the streets. That's what's going on here. So my concern is, if you've got this registry and it's national and it's robust and full of meat, as that senior police officer demanded, then what that essentially does, I feel, to sort of a young, nervous police officer, as might have been the case in Queensland, we don't know because there's been no inquiry, is you do sort of automatically go in, you know, it could be anything. It could be about parking fines. It could be, you know, a disruption with neighbours. It could be something totally innocuous. But because by the letter of the law and on the system, they can see that you've got a sports rifle or a gun or a hunting rifle, I feel they're going to go in so strongly and aggressively against essentially an innocent citizen because you're on a list. And of course, it's almost like the mind frame and the mentality that they would need to have when they're going in to see real world criminals with, you know, stashes of illegal guns. So I'm just concerned as to how, you know, ordinary citizens minding their own business who went and got a license and do target shooting are going to be treated.
Yeah, and look, and now you've got that federal legislation where they can go in and take over your profile on social media and and then they can pretend like it's you it's posting
without
something.
Without a warrant.
Yeah. They can go in and start making remarks and, you know, like some, you know, and then all of a sudden, yeah, they put a link on, yeah. Who knows?
I'm going to blame them, Harry. Every time I do a tweet I regret, I'm going to blame them and say I was hacked by the cops.
The good thing is a lot of people out there, the communities, a lot of people have realised what's going on. They're forming their own communities. They're invoking their rights and they're challenging everything. And, you know, this is legislation that's got no royal assent or proclamation certificate, and you can challenge it. You've got to use, what I keep saying to people is, just say no, and you've got, the pen is mightier than the sword. So let them do what they want to do, and then just fight, go to court, and then what you do is end up fight it out in court, sue them personally. You don't need a lawyer to do it. Learn your rights. And then sue them personally. And like we saw what happened with down in Victoria with that the security guard. But that's what they're doing. They're totally disregarding people's rights, you know, and thinking what we can do. No, we don't, you know, we're not going to let you go there when you've got the right to, you've got the right to report, you've got the right to have security and things like that. You've got the right to protect yourself, as much force as is reasonable, you know. That's a two-way street. That's the police. I mean, Victoria, there's a guy that was slammed, that individual in the subway station, I think it was that's put him on his back.
Oh, that was shocking.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of shocking instances. I don't know
how that guy is still alive. He's so lucky to be alive. The police officer is lucky that that guy is still alive. Listen, Harry, it's been fantastic speaking with you. Do you want to say your last name on air so I remember it next time?
Yeah, Harry Hatzikalimnios. No, you said it well.
Oh, thank you. My husband's Greek, so I was hoping that I might nail it quite well. Listen, Harry, it was really good speaking to you, and so nice that I know lots of police officers, real police officers with real world experience, who are not comfortable with what's going on in Australia and particularly Victoria at the moment. Really appreciate it, Harry. Thanks so much. I'll speak to you soon. You're listening to TNT Radio. Here's the news.